At this time, the Columbia Broadcasting System presents news analyst H.V. Kaltenborn with a review of today's news developments at home and abroad. Mr. Kaltenborn.
Good evening, everybody. Chancellor Hitler made another speech today, and it was hardly a peace speech. It certainly didn't sound peaceful. No power on earth, said the German Chancellor, will be able to force the Germany of today to her knees again. Germany is fully resolved, if the peace proposals should be rejected, to continue to fight to a finish. It reminded me of an address that the Kaiser made during the last war. It was much in the same tone. And we must remember that every leader of countries at war must talk that way. They cannot talk in any other way. If the leader of a nation at war should actually make a peaceful speech, that leader would be promptly removed, provided the country is fully engaged in the war. Now the question is the German nation so engaged? And the obvious answer is no. The German people were not prepared for a war against France or against Britain. They were prepared for the conquest of Poland. And now that that has been accomplished, they want peace. And then suddenly, unexpectedly, they find that they cannot get peace. And that explains a good deal of the material that has been coming out of Germany. All these hints, all these requests for intervention, all these efforts to have somebody, anybody, start a real peace move. Because it's perfectly obvious that so far as a peace move is concerned, the Hitler Reichstag speech was a complete dud. Perhaps that explains why he made this additional speech today. But of course, in temper and in content, that was no more peaceful than the one that he made in the Reichstag. Yes, he wants peace. But so far as anyone could interpret the Reichstag speech, there was not a single suggestion of a concession which he was willing to make in order to get peace. And there was another speech today, a speech by the Premier of France, Daladier. And here's what he said. The conquest of Poland is only another step in the conquering march of Hitlerism across Europe. We do not want our security brought into question every 6 months. What Hitler said in effect was this: let us agree to stop the war so that I can digest my conquest and it will be legalized. He quoted the assurances that came from Hitler after the conquest of Austria, after the conquest of the Sudetenland, and added, no nation can have security while there is a government in Europe that can wipe out nations as Germany wiped out Poland. Of course, there the French Prime Minister might have added, as Italy wiped out Ethiopia, as Japan wiped out Manchuria, as Russia threatens to wipe out the national sovereignty of Estonia, of Latvia, of Lithuania. But naturally, the French Premier was confining himself to the German situation so that he did not mention that. But it is significant to remember that he added this sentence: the only way to ensure a lasting peace is to end a regime by which a nation feels that it can wipe out other nations by conquest. And France, he said, will fight on until the safety of Europe is assured. Well, that, of course, is a tremendous undertaking. The safety of Europe has not been assured since its creation, something like 1,200 years ago, since Charlemagne first forged it into some sort of continental unity. And whether or not this particular war is going to succeed in creating at last that peaceful unity, well, one is inclined to doubt it. And yet, there is no doubt at all that the French Premier is sincere in his hope and in his feeling that perhaps this time it can be done, as the last time when the United States participated in the effort, it was not done, even though a complete victory was achieved. And there we come to the crucial problem which Daladier did not mention with so much as a single word. What are the peace aims of France and of Britain beyond the immediate defeat of Germany? How do they propose to reconstruct Europe? What are they going to do about the reconstitution of Poland? How are they going to divide up all these territories and these boundaries that have been changed as a result of the events of the last war and as a result of the events that have followed the last war? That, after all, is the real problem that the world confronts. That, perhaps, is primarily what Lloyd George has in mind when he advocates some sort of peace terms, when he is urging the British government to do what he himself, Lloyd George, failed to do when he had the opportunity to draw up a program that could actually reconstruct Europe, that could create European unity, that could lay a foundation that would give some chance of an enduring peace. And there's the thing that we did not hear from Premier Daladier today, that we may hear from Prime Minister Chamberlain when he speaks to the House of Commons on Thursday. At his press conference today, President Roosevelt indicated that he does not propose to respond to the hints from Berlin that he lead a peace movement. Now, he emphasizes the important fact that he's had no peace proposals from anybody, that all he's heard is a hint that he should go out and do something. That isn't a request. Oh, yes, if Germany had formally requested the President of the United States to intervene on behalf of the recreation of peace, that would be something. But countries don't make that kind of a request until they reach the point where they're willing to make tremendously important concessions to those countries with whom they are engaged in war. And so let's be mindful of that difference between a hint, oh yes, come out and help us get the peace we want, and the request, intervene, bring us peace. We're willing to pay the price. President Roosevelt, after all, is hardly the logical leader for bringing about a solution of this peculiarly European situation. The logical man is who? Benito Mussolini. And why? Because he's a member of the Rome-Berlin Axis. Because only a few days ago, he sent his foreign minister, Count Ciano, to Berlin, there to talk with Adolf Hitler about peace terms, about peace possibilities. And yet Count Ciano, whose visit to Berlin had been heralded very much in the German press, very little in the Italian press, returns to a Rome that ever since his return has been silent. Why? Because the news that he brought back was not such news as would have persuaded Benito Mussolini to venture into the arena as a champion of peace at this particular time. And so, when Benito Mussolini does not dare, why should the President of the United States of America, off in another part of the world, why should he intervene at this particular time? The significant thing is that the Hitler speech in the Reichstag has not had a single favorable echo. And the only reason, so far as one can gather from what he has said, that Lloyd George came out with a suggestion that it be made the basis of discussion is because he hopes that this time France and Britain will not repeat the mistake that he made in 1918 and will formulate a program that can captivate the imagination not only of France and of Britain, but also of the German people. Because remember what happened in Germany today. There was a false report of an armistice, and immediately crowds gathered, celebrations were unleashed. Everyone cheered and was delighted. It reminded me of our experience at the close of the World War, when some days before the actual armistice was signed, there came that report of a false armistice, that is, report that proved afterwards not to be true. And crowds, I remember, wended their way through the streets of Brooklyn and came up to the editorial department of the Brooklyn Eagle, where I was war editor, and they almost mobbed me because I tried to point out to them that peace, the armistice, was not possible on the basis of the geographic situation and the time that it would take the German delegates to reach the appointed place of rendezvous. Yes, once a people has that idea that peace can be had and then is disappointed, it has a peculiar effect on the people, and that's why the Germans announced tonight that this was a diabolical British trick, that the British Secret Service had launched that rumor. Well, that's a high compliment that the Germans paid to the British Secret Service in assuming that just because some British agent passes a hint, that the German people responds immediately and with such enthusiasm. Finland announces that she'll fight rather than surrender her sovereignty. Today, the Finns are evacuating their capital. They are doing that in response to the suggestion of the government because they anticipate the possibility of early air raids from the Soviet Union in case the ex-foreign minister of Finland, now on his way to Moscow, fails to respond to Stalin's demand. What are those demands likely to be? If we consider what the demands were that have been accepted by Estonia, that were accepted today by Latvia, we know that they will be demands for military and naval bases. Two, first, the permission to fortify certain islands in the Gulf of Finland, over which Finland has control. That Finland will probably refuse. She will probably refuse to alienate her sovereignty over any Finnish territory. Request number two, that the islands be not fortified. That request, Finland, in conjunction with Sweden, might accept. Because after all, the islands are interesting strategically to Germany, to Soviet Russia, to Sweden, to Finland, and perhaps the fairest way to deal with them is not to fortify them for or against any particular nation. But these assurances that come from the Baltic nations to Soviet Russia certainly represent the greatest diplomatic and strategic defeat that the Hitler regime has experienced since its beginning. And so the government at Helsinki tonight is strengthening its defenses. It's ordering air raid precautions. It's mobilizing troops. Sweden makes a friendly gesture of additional mobilization. And all this is a warning to Stalin to be moderate. He's likely to be. The vote of 65 to 26 in the Senate today against postponing action on the arms embargo indicates quite definitely that the embargo will be repealed. It's all over, said Senator Pittman. The final vote will be just the same as it was today. There's a difference of opinion on that. The isolationists claim that they'll get several additional votes, but they have practically conceded defeat. That means that the debate will probably not last much longer. There's little joy in talking for a lost cause. And already, we're getting to be a little more sensible about these restrictions on the movements of American ships. It's clear now that we're not going to prevent American ships from traveling up the Pacific coast to Canada, up the Atlantic to Canada, traveling to Bermuda, the Bahamas, Jamaica, French and British Guiana, and over the Pacific to Australia and New Zealand. They have the right to be there, and there is no reason why, because a possibility of risk might develop later, that we should deny them that right now. Immediately following this broadcast, Eric Severide, member of the CBS Paris staff, is going to speak from Brussels, Belgium, and will report to you on the situation in that neutral nation. Good night.
You have just been listening to H.V. Kaltenborn, Columbia's news analyst, give you his review of today's news developments at home and abroad. H.V. Kaltenborn will be heard again at this same time tomorrow.